Now we have been dealing with the fourth mantra, we have completed, we are coming to fifth mantra. Now few points to be reminded of. This fifth and sixth mantras are very important, because here we come to the conclusion of the reality that we can experience at the empirical level. We have already discussed that portion of the mantra, Soyam Atma Chadushpad. The Upanishads points its finger to us and say, Saha, that reality, the all-pervading reality, the omnipresent reality, the cosmic reality, which pervades entire creation, resides in our heart, I am. At the individual level, we experience the presence of this reality in waking state, in dream state, and also in dreamless sleep or deep sleep state. In waking state, this reality as a witness within us experiences the empirical phenomena, the gross phenomena, and then that witness, the experiencer, is called Vishwa or Vaishwanara. And then in dream state, it experiences the same empirical world consisting of name and form, the manifold phenomena, in a subtle way, without the mediation or interference of senses of perception or senses of action. Only mind is involved. And in deep sleep states, we don't see anything. We experience the same reality devoid of name and form. Now, in the fifth mantra, the phenomenon of Sushupti is explained. Sushupti is dreamless sleep or deep sleep state where we don't see anything. So, yatra supto na kanjana kamam kamayati means in the deep sleep state, there is no desire. Why? Because there is no name and no form. Our mind functions, our senses of perception and senses of action function only if there is manifoldness of experience. Otherwise, we don't see. You see, in deep sleep, there is no name and no form. But we experience something, but we are not aware of that experience when we are experiencing it. So, in fact, any kind of bliss, joy, or happiness is always associated with complete identification of our mind with that object. This you can verify even from the standpoint of mundane experiences. See, if you are watching a football match, soccer match, or if you are listening to a wonderful music, or if you are enjoying a great painting, if you are a connoisseur of painting, if you are an artist, for a minute, you forget yourself. You become completely identified with the music if you are a great connoisseur of music. And you become completely identified with the beauty, the grandeur of the painting if you are a connoisseur of painting, if you are yourself an artist. So, name and form completely vanish. Painting is there, but you reach a level of experience where you become identified with that experience. That means there is a kind of complete merging of the knower and the known, the seer and the seeing, the subject and object. And that gives you a kind of joy. You know, the word bliss we can use in a very limited sense, because the word bliss, I don't mean what generally may mean English language, but in Sanskrit it's called ananta. Ananta is translated in English as the word bliss. There is always a problem of translating philosophical terms into a different language. There is always a kind of some problem. Now, this bliss is associated with two characteristics. One is effortlessness. Second is an inner joy. This is what happens. So in deep sleep, see the mantra says, yatra suptaha na kanchana kamam kamayate. Mean in that deep sleep state, the one who is enjoying the susupti, as it is called, or deep sleep, or dreamless sleep, you don't see any form, and you are not aware of any name either, because there is only agrahana, means non-perception. Wrong perception is not there. Non-perception is there. The reality is veiled or concealed. There is no dvaita. There is no duality. Duality is not transcended, but duality is not experienced, because the instruments of the experience of duality become benumbed. Rather, they get merged in Atman. It doesn't make any difference. It doesn't transform the experiencer into a liberated person. The experiencer loses his instruments of experience lose their faculty of experience in deep sleep state. So you don't have any dream. Now, the Turiya, the Atman, the reality, which experiences this Susupti or this dreamless sleep experience in dreamless sleep is called prajna. The word prajna used. The word has got a great importance, you know, prajna. In Sanskrit, prakashena janati iti prajnyaha. Prajna eva prajnyaha. That prajna is able to get a general understanding, not special understanding. Now, a general comprehension, not special comprehension. The Bhashyakara, the commentator, gives a graphic example that will make it very clear. He compares a dream state and waking state to our normal experiences during daytime. See, during daytime, when you look at the bay from here, you can see the bridge, the buildings, the roads, vehicles, pedestrian walking in the streets, all these you find. There is manifoldness, a plurality or diversity of objects you can see. Things are visible, and each object is seen as distinct from each other object. This is the experience of waking state, and this is also the experience of dream state. In dream state also, you can experience manifoldness, diversity, plurality of objects. Now, when the sun sets in the west, all these objects are covered with darkness. There is no, suppose you think of a situation where there is no electricity. Everything is dark. Everything is covered in darkness. There is one dark veil that is experienced. That's all. You can't distinguish a vehicle from pedestrians. You can't distinguish a tall building from the bridge. Just one dark veil is seen. Now, commentator Shankaracharya compares deep sleep experience to this state, where in pitch darkness, when there is no sunlight, you are not able to see plurality, you are not able to see manifoldness, you are not able to see diversity of experience, of objects. One dark veil only, you see. That is compared to sushupti, or deep sleep state. Now, that is the comparison. That's why it is stated here, in the mantra you find here. Na kanchana swapnam pasyati tas susuptam susupta sthana ekibhuta. See, ekibhuta means everything becoming one. One dark veil is seen. There is no, you can't distinguish a building, one building from another building. You can't distinguish one vehicle from another vehicle. The car from the bus. You can't distinguish. Eki bhutaha, mantra says. Means one, there is a kind of unity. Unity of darkness, not unity of light. If it were unity of light, will be become samadhi. It is unity of darkness. There is absolute non-comprehension. This is what happens. So, it's called prajnana ghanaha. So, what happens is, at that time, this witness, it withdraws itself from all external objects, because external objects are not seen, not experienced. So, there is a kind of ghani bhavana, means kind of solidification, everything becoming one, everything becomes one unseen, invisible darkness. And then also there is an experience of joy. That joy is not the joy of awareness or consciousness. That joy is associated with absence of manifoldness. You can transcend Dvaita in Samadhi. But in Sushupti, you are not aware of the existence of Dvaita. So this is the different difference. See, if you are ill, you have given some medicine, and you are not able to, you are not aware of the pain, it's not because you transcend pain, but because the psychological mechanism, the physical mechanism which makes you aware of pain is benumbed. The moment the effect of the medicine goes away, again the pain, you feel the pain. You are not transcending the pain. So that's what really happens in Sushupti. So ekibhuta prajnanakana eva anantamayaka, the word defined anantamayaka. Anantamaya means, ananta means bliss. There is plenty of bliss. The anantamaya means having a lot of joy or bliss. But it doesn't become identified bliss, not Ananda Swarupa. Two words are to be noticed. Ananda Swarupa and Ananda Mayaha. When you use the word Ananda Mayaha, means a Mayat Pratyaya itself indicates that you have got a lot of joy or happiness. But that is not everlasting. But for some time, it gives you a feeling, a glimpse of the experience of transcending plurality. And the moment you transcend plurality, you enjoy peace and bliss. Even in deep sleep, when you transcend plurality, when you become yourself identified everything with everything, there is the experience of joy or bliss. So that's for even in mundane experience we can see. Whenever there is distinction, duality, we feel pain. And there's a famous mantra in the Chandogya Upanishad, Dvaita ki bhayam bhavati. Dvaita, or duality or plurality or distinction, is always the root cause of all fear, all pain, all misery. The moment we feel identified with something, we feel joy. That's why a musician, when he enjoys a beautiful classical musical performance, he forgets himself. or if he's a painter himself, when he goes to an art gallery, when he enjoys the painting of a great master, he forgets for some time. And also, if you are interested in literature, then when you read a beautiful poetry, then also you forget for some time, because that duality vanishes for a minute. You become identified with the character. Or if you are a literary, if you are a student of literature, if you read a classical novel or short story or anything, you forget for some time. Maybe for split seconds. Or even a sportsman, when he plays, he may forget. Anybody who reaches a superlative level of excellence gets a glimpse of this transcendental experience. Even in physics, sports field, you find. I have seen in some old people who can't even walk, they will ask, in India, you know, cricket is a great race, they will be inquiring, what is the latest score? Maybe the old man cannot even walk properly, they will on playing. He perhaps himself, but you know, very much, because his mind is so much involved. And even he watches a cricket match, a great player like Tendulkar is a classical player, he forgets himself. So it happens in him. Or you hear me, I don't know what kind of sports score. Football, people were, even in the mundane physical field, for a split second, when you watch a sports performance, if you are a great connoisseur, if you're a great fan, you forget for a minute. You become identified with that, with what you are seeing. That gives a glimpse of the transcendental experience which is being discussed here. But remember, it's only because of some kind of what you call a flashing experience of unity of subject and object. Subject and object becoming one, merging in one. That is the source of joy or happiness. So it is, that gives anantamaya, means a lot of joy. That's why everyone wants to go to sleep. Nobody wants to have nightmares. If possible, everyone wants to go to deep sleep so that he can forget himself. He can go beyond dvaita. He can go beyond duality, manifoldness, plurality. So that's why ananta mayeha. The Upanishad uses the word ananta mayeha. Ananda book it is. Ananda means somebody who enjoys ananta. Ananda means bliss. Who enjoys ananda. Sushupti is the only source, the only time when we really enjoy ananda. For a minute. So it's called anantamayaka, ananda bhuk. Cheto-mukha. Cheto-mukha means, see, the sushupti is in a way, is the source, is the cause, is a causal form, is the source of other experiences. Some people may be a bit difficult to understand why Sushupti is called the source. Sushupti, in Sushupti state, you can find the seeds of both waking, both the experiences of waking state and also dream state. I shall explain the metaphysical reason. As I said earlier, Sushupti is associated with non-comprehension, complete concealment of everything. That point is very clear. And in waking state and dream state, we have got wrong cognition, because we are not able to experience the presence of Atman, the absolute reality. We are always experiencing the manifoldness, the diversity of the world around us. That is from a phenomenal point of view. From a subjective point of view, in dream state and waking state, we feel we are happy, we are miserable, we cry, we express joy. All these manifold experiences are experienced in dream and waking state. So in dream and waking state, there is certainly wrong cognition, we mistake the reality, the Brahman, as the phenomenal empirical world. We are only aware of the experience of the empirical world. We are not aware of the reality of absolute Brahman. So there is concealment and also there is wrong cognition. It is called agrahanam and anyathagrahanam. Agrahanam means complete absence of comprehension or cognition of the absolute reality. Anyathagrahanam means cognizing something else in place of the reality. To put it in the analogy of serpent and rope, in waking state and dream state, there is not only non-comprehension of rope, but there is also the comprehension of the snake. You not only don't see, don't understand that it is the rope that is lying in front of you, but you also mistake that rope to be the snake or stick. I shall remind you of this analogy once more. I said that I'm not, but in a few words, you think of a room which is dimly lit. There is not enough light, but it's not very dark either. Something is visible, something lying on the floor, and it is a piece of rope. You mistake the rope to be snake. Now here, you are not able to recognize that it is rope. That is concealment. The rope is concealed. But you also mistake the rope to the snake. So there is superimposition of snake on the rope. Similarly, in dream and waking state, the reality is concealed, but unreality is superimposed on the real. But in sushupti or deep sleep state, there is no superimposition of the unreal on the real. There is only concealment of the real. So, and here, superimposition of the unreal on the real is caused by the concealment of the real. Because the rope is concealed, you mistake it to be the snake. So, in fact, wrong cognition is the effect and non-comprehension is the cause. Now, in susupti or deep sleep, there is only non-cognition or non-comprehension, which is a cause. So, and dream and waking state, there is concealment and also there is cause and also effect. So, therefore, you can very easily understand that susupti is the cause. So, from susupti, you go to waking state and dream state. That is why the experiencer at the individual level is called prajna. One who really is unaware of the reality, or another interpretation is the one who cannot experience the manifoldness, because who completely loses his ability to experience the manifold. That is why it is called the cause, the cheto mukha. The word is used, cheto mukha. Prajnaha tritiya pada. This prajna is the third quarter of this turiya. Now again, we will come to the next mantra. When we read the seventh mantra, surprisingly, you find the whole philosophy becomes very obvious. That is the speciality of this Upanishad. Even if the implication of the earlier mantras are a bit obscure at this stage, it becomes very clear as we proceed, as we advance, as we go to the seventh mantra, which is one of the most important philosophical point of view mantra of this Upanishad. We'll come to the seventh mantra after some time. Now we'll go to the sixth mantra. Esha sarveshwaraha, esha సర్వజ్ఞః ఏష అంతర్యామి ఏష యోనిః సర్వస్య ప్రభవాప్యో హి భూతానాం. నౌ ఏష మీన్స్ దిస్ ఎక్స్పీరియన్సర్, ది ఎక్స్పీరియన్సర్ ఇన్ సుషుప్తి, బికాస్ ఇన్ సుషుప్తి విచ్ ఇస్ ఎ కాసల్ ఫార్మ్ వి ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్ the complete concealment of the reality, which is actually the cause of the superimposition of the real on the unreal. Because concealment or non-comprehension is the cause of wrong comprehension. You are not being able to understand this is rope is the cause of your wrong understanding that this is snake. If you understand this is rope, you will not think it is snake. So that analogy should be kept in mind. So very often Indian, modern Indian philosophers, professors in the university say, the old rope never gets broken and the old snake never dies. Because this analogy is called Rajju Sarpa Bhranti, it is called. The rope and snake analogy, it was used for the first time by Nagarjuna in Moola Madhyamika, the work, the 4th century AD. Later in other works also, in Shankara's Bhashya also it comes. In Gaudapada Skarika and all it comes. So, Esha Sarveshwaraha. Now, this experiencer in deep sleep is Sarveshwaraha. Because it is the causal form. And Esha Sarvajnaha. Sarveshwami, he is the Supreme Lord. At the macro level, at the cosmic level, this experiencer is Isharaha. Here I must explain another point. We have already explained the experiencer of waking state, the experience of dream state. Now, in waking state, at the individual level, the experiencer is called the Vaishwanaraha or Vishwa, the one who experiences this gross manifoldness of the universe. This totality, it is its totality or in its holistic form, that experiences together is called Virat, that means the entire universe, this cosmic phenomena that we experience in waking state. The experiencer, the drashta, as an individual, is called Vishwa. And the totality of all his experiences in waking state is together called Virar. Virar means nothing but the visible phenomenal world that we recognize, that we cognize with the mind and the five senses of perception. That is a phenomenal world. Virat it is called. Now, this with regard to waking state. In dream state, this experiencer who experiences all this in a subtle way is called Taijasa in the language of the Upanishads. And the totality of all his dream experiences together is called Hiranyagarbha. The totality of all subtle experiences together, Hiranyagarbha, the totality of all gross experiences together, called Virat. Now, in deep sleep state, in dreamless sleep state, the totality of all these experiences in their causal form is called Ishvara. The word is Ishvara. Another term is called Antaryami. That is at the macro level. So it is called samashti level. The totality of all experiences associated with susupti or dreamless sleep or deep sleep state is called Isharaka. That Isharaka is explained here. Sarveshwaraka, Sarvajnaka, Anta, Yonihi, etc. I will explain this one after another. At the experiencer level, that means at the micro level, at the individual level, the experiencer is called Prajnaha, and the totality of all his experiences is called Ishvara. The word Ishvara in the sense the one who controls regulates everything, because it is a causal form. That's why the world is created by God. The monotheistic concept is explained here. In fact, Advaita accepts all other systems of philosophy. Advaita fully recognizes, agrees with, and accepts all other concepts of God, explained in all religions. Advaita says there is something beyond that, that's all. This is all correct, but this is not the whole of reality. There is something beyond that. So, in Advaitic tradition, Ishvara is a reality. That is, Ishvara means God with attributes, God with name, God with form, God who creates this world, God who sustains and regulates this world, the God who distributes rewards and punishment, is a reality. But that God is explained as the understanding of the absolute through the prism of time, space and causation. Swami Vivekananda in modern English has explained, if you look at the absolute reality, which is in fact without attributes or beyond attributes, beyond name, beyond form, etc. But if you look at this absolute reality, which is formless, which is attributeless, if you look at it through the prism, through the spectacle of time, space and causation, then it is called Ishvara. It is called God, capital letter G, God. The creator God, the one who creates this world. That is the cause of everything. Because from him only the whole world emerges. So, that God is explained. What is that God? That God is Sarveshwara. Means Sarvesham Bhutanam Ishvara in Sanskrit. Means he is the controller, regulator, creator of everything in this world. The totality of all causal experiences is a creation of this God. So again, you have to remember, Swamiji in modern English has given a very, very memorable definition of God. What Swamiji says, God, capital letter G, God, Ishvara, I mean the God of monotheistic religions, and also non-Advaitic schools of Vedanta, Ramanujai, Madhvais, etc. Because non-Advaitic schools of Vedanta are also monotheistic religions, monotheistic religious philosophies. So they have posited a God who creates this world, who sustains the world, who regulates everything. That God is nothing but the vision of the absolute reality through the prism of time, space and causation. Because that God creates, if you think of creation, you have to think of a time when he creates it. And when you think of creation, then you have to think of space. And when you think of creation, you have to think of God as the efficient cause of God. But only efficient cause, not material cause. In all monotheistic religions, also in all non-Advaitic schools of Vedanta, Ramanuja, Madhva, and so on, that the other schools of Vedanta, non-Advaitic schools of Vedanta, God is the efficient cause. God creates his world. But God is not a material cause. God becomes a material, the Brahman becomes a material cause only in Advaita. And if you say God is the efficient cause and also material cause, then it is nothing but Brahman. It is not a God with name and form. So here, the sixth mantra explains, and Esa Sarveshwaraha, Esa Sarvajnaha, because all knowledge means there is always the distinction between knowledge, knower, and known. Something which is known, and the process of knowing, and also the one who knows. So, Sarvajnaha. Esa Antaryami, Antaryami, the indweller. Because that God is present in everything and everybody. Gita has got two famous mantras which explains this point. Ishvara Sarvabhudanam Kridesi Arjuna Tishthadi Ramayan Sarvabhudani Yantrarudhani Maya. You can find this in the 18th chapter. This God is present as the indweller, as the immanent reality in everything in this world. And existing as the immanent reality in everything, in everybody in this world, He regulates, controls the entire universe as a mechanic controls the machine. That's it. See, Brahmayan Sarvabhudani Yantra Rudhani. Yantra, machine, is also mentioned by Lord Krishna in Gita. So, God is a mechanic who operates the machine of His creation. And then, in some other places also you can find this idea mentioned. So, again, you have to remember, Esha Antaryami. Antaryami is indweller. This Antaryami is also a very important concept in the Upanishadic concept of Ishvara or God. In the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, there is a long dialogue in Yajnavalkya expounds this idea of God as the immanent reality present in everything in this world. The mantra is this: Ye prithivyam tishthan prithivyam antaraha, ye prithivina veda yasya prithivi shariram, ye prithivya antaro yamayedi eshate atma antaryami amruta. This is the exposition of Yajnavalkya. I shall explain in English. Ye prithivyam tishthan, this antaryami, this God, the indweller, who exists on earth. This is the first part of mantra. This God, the creator God, who exists on earth. Now, if the mantra stops there, you can say trees and mountains, they are also existing on earth. So, they can be called God. No. So, Shankaracharya, in his commentary, very logically analyzes these mantras. In fact, all the metaphysical interpretations that can be associated with any Vedic mantra is a creation of Shankaracharya. It was he who built this unique philosophical edifice on the Upanishadic mantra. Ye prithivyam tishthan. Ye prithivyam antaraka. So, in order to rule out the possibility of a wrong interpretation, that whatever you see on earth, trees and mountains, etc., are God, Shankaracharya says this reality is within. Prithivya antaraha is within. In that case, you know, in many pantheistic religions, and also in panatheistic religions, they posit a God who is present behind every natural phenomenon. It is not so. So, he says, Ye prithivya antara, yam prithivi na veda. Earth doesn't know that reality. Then, yasya prithivi shariram. For that God, this prithivi is an expression, is a vehicle, is a means, an instrument, a medium through which it expresses itself. You can't say the electricity is the bulb through which it works. Because electricity functions in so many forms, depending upon the instrument, the medium through which it manifests. So, yasya prithivi shariram, this earth is not God. This earth is only a vehicle, a medium through which that reality manifests. And depending upon the manifoldness or plurality of the characteristics of the medium, its manifestation also changes. Yasya prithivi shariram. Ye prithivyah antaro yamayati. So, existing within everything on this earth, it controls earth. So, everything is a medium for that reality to manifest. But the medium doesn't know this reality. The bulb, the glass, out of which this bulb is made, doesn't know anything about electricity. Electricity just manifests through this bulb. That's all. And when the medium takes the form of this public address system, then it operates functions in a different way, depending upon it on the attributes of the medium. So, but within, as the immanent reality within all these media, all these instruments, it controls everything in this world. And then Yajnavalkya says, Esate Atma, that reality is your own self, your own self. That is what Yajnavalkya says. See, Yajnavalkya says, this reality, which is all-pervading on earth, which is immanent on everything on earth. Earth here means everything in universe that you can think of. In fact, the month, this is the beginning of a long discourse by Yajnavalkya. Then Yajnavalkya goes on explaining prithvi, apaha, ups, and so on. Air, water, human, different senses of man's perception, different senses of action, everything that you can conceive of in this phenomenal world. Yajnavalkya lists, he includes. Then he says, this reality is expressing itself in all this manifoldness, in all this diverse phenomena. Nothing is left out. So, it is neither pantheism, nor panentheism, nor monotheism, or monism. It is the absolute idealism that Yajnavalkya ultimately reaches at the end of this discourse. Of course, I don't have time to go through. It comes in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, that means third chapter. Those who are interested, you can read Brihadaranyaka, in the third chapter, you can find. Now, coming to the subject again. So, we have already reached Antaryami. Esha Yoni. Yoni means the source of everything. That means the reality from which everything emerges. The entire universe emerges out of it. Sarvasya Prabhavaha Appeha. Prabhava means beginning, origination, birth. Appeha means dissolution. So, this Ishara is the beginning, the point of origination, the source of everything. It is also the point of dissolution of everything. And everything exists in this reality. That is, Ishara, God, seen or interpreted through the prism of time, space and causation. The moment you go beyond time, space and causation, it is Nirguna, Niragara, Nirvisesha, Brahman, which we will explain in the sixth, in the seventh mantra, that is Turiya. So time, space and causation is nothing but relativity, another name, Maya. So if you look at the absolute reality through the prism of Maya, of time, space and causation, that is Ishvara. When you go beyond that, it is Turiya, which we are going to explain in the seventh mantra, which is the most important, one of the most important verses, mantras of this Upanishad. The mantra is this, na antapraknyam, na bhagishpraknyam, na ubhayadapraknyam, na prajnanaghanam, na praknyam, na apraknyam, adrishyam, avyavaharyam, agrahyam, alakshanam, achindyam, avyapadeshyam, ekarma pratyasaram, prapanchopashamam, shantam, shivam, advaitam, chaturtham, manyande, sa atma, sa vijneha. The famous mantra. So before coming to this mantra, we have to keep a few points in mind. The Upanishads approach reality from different angles. Now, from one point of view, it approaches from the cosmic and also the acosmic angles. Cosmic angles means is this. Well, you can either you can say that everything that you think of, you see, you experience is Brahman only, the absolute reality only. That's one way to do. That means, see, if you admit the existence of anything other than Brahman, then it becomes duality, it becomes dvaita. You are admitting two realities. So whatever you experience, is Brahman only. Sarvam Kalu Idam Brahma. This is the cosmic approach. Whatever you experience is Brahman only. I shall explain this again in the light of the rope snake analogy. See, the object that is lying there on the floor can be approached from two angles. One is the real thing, that is Rajju, that is rope, and the unreal thing, that is snake. But both indicate the same thing. The reality is one. So even when you call it snake, what you are implying, what you are pointing your finger towards is rope only. Only your understanding is wrong, that's all. So when we look at this world, and when we look at this world, this is mountain, this is river, this is valley, this is ocean and so on, this is space and so on, if you call it. And these are different entities. Well, then you are giving each of these entities an independent status, which is ignorance. But if you look at the whole thing as the one reality, the real Brahman only, then you are taking the cosmic approach. In other words, again coming back to the rope snake analogy, the rope may be lying in a particular shape, you know. So you say this part is its head, this part is its tail, and another, I mean, the portion between the two is its middle portion of the body, etc. So whatever you are explaining, maybe head or tail, whatever, it is only that object only, it's you only. So even if you are seeing this world as world, you are actually seeing Brahman only. Only you think that it is something other than Brahman. So whatever you experience, you think of, you conceive of, is in fact the reality only. Surupa Drishtya Brahman means in its true essence it is Brahman only. You may call this is viper, this is cobra, whatever, you may give different names to that piece of rope. Five people seeing this rope may have five schools of thoughts as to what the objective, what kind of snake it is. One man may say it is cobra, another man may say viper, etc. Whatever it is, it is actually rope only. So people may call different names. People may attribute different names to Brahman, the reality. But in reality, it is Brahman only. Sarvam Kalu Idam Brahma. This is one approach. This is a cosmic approach. The other is a cosmic approach. Well, the Upanishad says, well, what you see, this river, is not real. This is all unreal. Because when you use the word river, is a nama, name is the, a form is the, it cannot be real. So, just as saying, you know, this is cobra, it is unreal. This is viper, it is unreal. So you say this is mountain, it is unreal. So neti neti and iti iti in Sri Ramakrishna's gospel. One is the cosmic approach, the other is a cosmic approach. If you look at entire experience phenomenon as the one reality, then also you are approaching the truth. And if you deny all unreal cognitions, then also you are slowly moving towards the absolute reality. Here, the Upanishad, in the 7th mantra, it takes the acosmic approach. Means, everything is denied. Because, he says, na antaprakyam, na bhishprakyam. I should explain this, it takes some time. It is not what we experience in dream state, na antaprakyam. It is not what we experience in waking state, na bhishprakyam, na ubhayadaprakyam. And it is not the combination of both. Then what it is? So everything is denied. And everything is denied, then what is left? What cannot be denied is the absolute reality. In fact, Upanishad tells you the reality cannot be explained. So the reality that can be only explained by explaining what it is not. You have to remember, Sarvam Khalu Idam Brahma, as I said, everything is Brahman only. It is not a definition. It is not an explanation. It is only an attempt to understand the inexplicable. And at the end, the Upanishad says, this is only an attempt to understand. Unless you make an attempt, you will not be able to understand that it is beyond explanation. Unless you make an attempt to explain, inexplicability, undefinability cannot be understood. So here in the seventh mantra, the Upanishad explains the reality by explaining what it is not. It has something to do with our epistemological tradition, theory of knowledge, you know. Vedanta accepts altogether six tools of knowledge. One is pratyaksha. Pratyaksha is perception. Anumana, inference. Shabda, verbal testimony. Then upamana, which is comparison. Arthavati, which is presumption. Anupalabdhi, which is the non-cognition. It can be called non-cognition. These are the six which is called pramana, means tools of knowledge, instruments of knowledge. That is the Vedantic epistemology. In Indian philosophical tradition, different schools of thought accept different tools of knowledge. The crudest schools of materialism accept only one pramana, means one instrument of knowledge, that is only sensory perception. Whatever you see with your eyes or hear with your ears, whatever you cognize with the five senses of perception, is true, nothing beyond that. That is the crudest school of thought, called Charvakas, which are divided, they are divided into schools. I won't go into those details right now. But anyhow, Vedantins, Advaita Vedantins, accept six tools of knowledge. That is called pratyaksha, anumana, upamana, shabda, arthabhati, anupalabdhi. Pratyaksha means perception. Anumana means inference. Upamana means comparison. And shabda means verbal testimony. Arthabhati means presumption. And anupalabdhi means non-cognition. In course of time, I shall explain this, because now, otherwise, if I explain now, we will be distracted from the main topic here. Now, Advaitins assert that none of these instruments of knowledge can explain the reality. So it is the limit of, it is beyond all these tools of knowledge, tools of knowing. So it's called Sarva Pramana Avadhi, it is called. Means tools of knowledge, instruments of knowledge, can never go and can never reach that level. Even the statement that Aham Brahmasmi is only penultimate stage. I am the Brahman, the experience vika. It is only an attempt and a part of philosophy to explain what philosophy can never fully explain. Because philosophy cannot explain the reality in Vedanta. Because reality is a matter of experience, and the only language of the reality is experience itself. Only experience can explain experience. Perception, inference, or comparison, verbal testimony, and Upanishads all are included in verbal testimony. All the Upanishads that we are studying also including verbal testimony. because the Upanishads assert again and again that we cannot explain the ultimate reality. Upanishads do not say that we here, this book contains everything about God, nothing beyond this. Because you are limiting God within the pages of a few pages of a book. So Upanishads themselves say, this reality is only a matter of intuitive inner experience, and experience can only be experienced, experience can never be explained. That's the statement of the Upanishad. Now, the best way to explain the reality is to remove all the wrong notions that we have got with regard to what the reality is. So, in his commentary, Shankaracharya gives a very long and celebrated description of this mantra. So, Nanta Prajnam, it is stated here. Seventh mantra. Nanta Prajnam. This is not something that you experience in dream. This is not the experiencer associated with dream states. Nabhish Prajnam. And this is not anything associated with the experiencer in waking states. Now, Bhayada Prajnam, and it is not a combination of both. Because the moment you admit that this reality is the one which experiences the dream experiences or the waking state experiences, you are limiting the reality. At the same time, this reality is present in all these experiences. That point should be understood. Atman cannot be defined as the experience or waking state experiences. Atman cannot be defined as the experiences of dream state experiences. Atman cannot be defined as the experience of both. At the same time, without the presence of Atman as the witness, we can never have either waking state experience, dream state experience, or deep sleep state experience. If all experiences are possible because Atman is present. But Atman itself is not limited or associated with any of these states. That is the description of the Upanishad. No, antaprajnam doesn't mean that Atman is absent in dream. Without the presence of Atman, one can never have dream state experiences. In the Bhashya, Shankaracharya says, the same Atman, the same Turiya is present in dream, in waking, and also in deep sleep. Because when you come out of your dream, you are able to remember. When you come out of your dream and when you reach the waking state, you are able to recollect all your dreams. Why? Because there is a witness, an experiencer, which is common in waking state and also dream state. So there is a thread of unity, the continuation of the presence of the same reality in both. So the reality is present there, but the reality is not confined to that. That's the idea there. So, and also this Upanishad says that the same Atman is present in deep sleep state also. That's why when we come out of deep sleep, we feel a great relaxation. I had a wonderful sleep. That feeling comes. Because we experience a state where duality did not exist. Not that we transcended duality, but we did not experience duality in deep sleep. And whenever we are not experiencing duality, it means bliss. That's why we call Ananda Bhuk, Ananda Mayaha. We already explained the earlier mantras. So when we come back to waking state, we feel we had a wonderful sleep. That feeling of joy, bliss, complete restfulness is a flash of unity of subject and object, experiencer and experienced, knower and known. which gives a distant glimpse of the real experience of samadhi or jiva brahmaikyam. That means the experience of aham brahmasmi in his true state. But at the same time, this deep sleep state is not a state to which the reality of Turiya is confined. It is even beyond that. So that's the line of description here. Na antapraknyam, na bhagishpraknyam, na ubhayadapraknyam. It is not a combination of both the waking and dream experiences. Na prajnanaghanam. Prajnanaghanam, that experience is related to deep sleep. It is not experienced deep sleep. As we already explained earlier, prajnanaghana, that state is related to deep sleep or sushupti. And here the seventh mantra says, this turiya, this reality, is not confined to sushupti state. It is present there, but it is not confined, it is not limited by that state. I think this time is up. Na prajnanaghanam, na prajnam, na prajnam, etc. Now we will continue this class next Friday. If you have got anything to ask within 5 minutes, you can ask, or we can write down the question later. I shall just leave you 5 minutes. If none of you have got any doubts or questions, we'll conclude now. In fact, the Upanishads themselves say, you know, see, I'm the experience, aham brahmasmi, I'm Brahman. That state is a penultimate state. That knowledge, the I'm Brahman, that knowledge removes all other cognitions, other consumptions. Before we reach that state, we thought, I'm this man, suffering and enjoying. Aham, that is in Sanskrit called aham sukhi, aham dukhi. I am enjoying, I am suffering. Aham samsari, aham samsari. Upanishad Bhashya says, I am father, I am son, I am child, I am his friend, I have lost my property, my health. In the Bhashya, Shankaracharya give very humorous description. Some people go on shouting, say, murtova, hatova, nashtam me vittam, hato me putra. My son is dead, my wealth is lost, my house is gone, I am now sick, I am now happy, I am now unhappy. All these experiences which are related to the idea that I am this body, I am the son of that person, I am the brother of that person. All these wrong notions are completely removed by the notion I am Brahman. And that is the role of Shastra or Upanishads or books in Vedanta. So, Shankara makes a very important statement. Shastram tu ajnana nivartakam na jnana pravartakam. The idea that I am Brahman, I am the reality, this works as a light which removes the darkness. And this dark, because of this darkness, people thought this rope in front of you is a snake, a stick, a thin stream of water, or a crack on the floor. In Vedanta it's called Bhuchidra, Sarpa, Danda, and Jaladhara, all these things. So four people thought that four people had four wrong cognitions with regard to what the object is. Similarly, normally we have the wrong notion that we are and the son of that person, the brother of that person, I am now sick, I am now healthy, and so on. All these wrong notions which create problems, which creates tension, anxiety, all this can be removed by studying the Upanishads and by performing spiritual practices, and by coming to the conclusion that I am Brahman. It is like a light. See, light doesn't produce rope. Light only removes the darkness, which was the cause of wrong perceptions with regard to what the object was. So, this Shastra helps you to remove all wrong notions. So, Shastram tu ajnana nivartam. It removes wrong knowledge. It doesn't give you knowledge. The knowledge is not creation of Shastra. It comes from within. When we remove all the wrong notions with regard to what we are, then the right notion need not be brought in by anybody. Right notion comes automatically. Rope is not a creation of light. Light only removes darkness. And once darkness is removed, all wrong notion also removed, we understand this ritual. It is rope only. This is the role of Shastra. Aham Brahmasmi or I am Brahman, this Mahavakya also has got the same role. So that's why the experience cannot be explained even by this Mahavakya. See, Sri Ramakrishna's gospel, you find, in the gospel, Sri Ramakrishna says, at the highest level, we have got in Samadhi level, in Jiva Brahma Ikya, the experience of complete unity of individual soul and universal soul. I mean, Jiva Brahma Ikya. That cannot be explained. You have to come down several steps. Then only you have got Omkar, Om. And again you have to come down several steps. Then only you have got Gayatri. Gayatri is the essence of Vedas. Again you have to come down several steps. Then only Vedas. So where is the experience? Experience is beyond all words, beyond all books also. So even I am Brahman, that feeling, sorry, that perfect understanding is just one inch below the experience, which is indicated by this word. The experience referred to or implied by this Mahavakya, Aham Brahmasmi, is in fact beyond Mahavakya. Mahavakya cannot fully explain the experience. It only points out. That's all. I think... Anybody else?
Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Dasa Shri Ram.